And when I looked closer, there was a Sasquatch face on the other side, and it was looking right back in at us.
Staring back at me is a silhouette of a very, very giant monkey.
An intriguing discovery is being investigated in a community east of Seattle. Someone came across a lengthy trail of extremely large footprints.
They are up there.
Welcome, everyone. You've tuned into the Nicola Valley Bigfoot Podcast, a place where your encounters are told. To share your encounter and to be on the show, email me at NicolaValleyBigfoot@gmail.com. Now, sit back and enjoy the show.
Hi, my name's Rich Denton, and I presently live in eastern Nebraska. But when I was 12 years old, I had an experience face to face with a big guy. Now, this started out in the fall of 12, or excuse me, 82, my bad. My parents are divorced, and my dad had lived in Yamhill, Oregon. And we lived back up in the woods, up on a hill. And we had flown in from Nebraska and visited him. And one of our chores was to go quarter to a half a mile up the hill to feed the cows. Well, none of the neighbors knew my dad had kids or knew that we were there. So on the second day, we went up to feed the cows and was on the way back. And now my dad had like six dogs. And they, you know, running in and out of the low-hanging brush, mostly evergreen trees. And all of a sudden, they come out from underneath the trees, and they start circling me and my sister and trying to, like, they're trying to herd us down the hill. When all of a sudden, out of the trees comes a rock, like somebody had thrown an undersized or underhand rock out from the bush about softball size. And landed at us. So my sister threw it back into the brush, and in about 2 minutes later it came out again. Now we knew it wasn't my stepmom because we had just heard her come out of the house and bang the screen door. So that was one of our first encounters. Well, then as the summer went on, me and my sister both thought we'd hear a woman screaming. And my dad would brush it off, or what we would hear a sound like a baseball bat smacking a tree, and you know, didn't know nothing of it. So my sister went back home to my mom, and I stayed a year with my dad. And not a lot happened until later on in the fall, where I went up to the other barn to feed the horse, and the horse had its nose pointed into the barn corner, and it had like it been going back and forth, like it was trying to defend itself with its back legs. Well, in the mud, there was huge footprints. And I called my dad over to look at them, and he didn't think nothing of them. But that was one of the curious things, too. Well, then about December, late January, it had gotten real cold, and I was in my room one night about 10:30, and I slept in the basement, and the dogs would always run out to the backyard and howl at the coyotes. Well, then all of a sudden one night they're out howling at the coyotes, and all of a sudden they come plowing back into the yard and go underneath the porch. Now, they only do this when they're scared. So I was, you know, I wonder what's out there. And they were making a lot of noise. And they were right by my window. So I was rolled over to bang on the wall with a tennis shoe. And I looked out the window. And about 3 feet away from me was something I will never, ever forget in my life. It had a pointed head, heavy eyebrow, And the yard light was on, so I kind of had a good look. It was darkish red, if not almost black. Longer hair, probably 8 inches, 6-8 inches long. And it looked human. But it scared the crap out of me. So I pulled the covers over my head. And I thought I was in there like forever, but it only probably been like 30 seconds. And I looked again, and it was gone. So I went outside, and I had my flashlight. And there by my window was footprints. I said, Dad's got to believe me now. I'll show him in the morning. Well, as it happened, being living not too far from the coast of Oregon, it rained in the middle of the night.
Oh, man.
And so not a lot happened again, but I kept hearing the knocks and the screams. And my dad would get into moods where he would want to, you know, heavy contemplate how dads would sometimes and just go walk in the woods and think about stuff. And he'd go 4 or 5 hours. We wouldn't see him. He said he was checking fence, but we just think he'd just go walk in the woods. Well, he came back after a half an hour and he grabbed his rifle. And he told my stepmom that I was not allowed to go outside that day. And I was no longer allowed to go up to feed cows when it was starting to get dark. And he went out and left for a few hours. Well, my dad passed away a couple years ago. And my sister had asked him, or, you know, if he had ever seen anything out there, because I'd always told her about my encounter. And he said he had went on a walk and had seen something. He didn't know what it was. It wasn't no bear. And it looked human, but it couldn't have been, looked like an escaped gorilla, was his words. So time goes by. I go back to live with my mom, get married, have kids, start seeing all this research and, you know, stuff that would happen, you know, making sense, the tossing of stones, the bang, you know, the tree knocks, the screams. So my wife, when I got married to her, was very skeptical. And, you know, the more we learned about it, she was okay, maybe there's something to this. Well, about 3 years ago, I reconnected with my stepmom. And we went out to Yamhill County, Oregon, to see her. Well, her brother logs and was logging. And we'd stopped to talk to him. And down this deep ravine, hollow type geographical, you know, feature, it was heavily wooded, really dark. We heard a huge knock. And he goes, oh, that's just the wind. And I'm looking up, there's no wind. And then about a minute later, it does it again. And he got a real confused look on his face. And we both walked down to the ravine, walked over to the edge, and we could hear something crashing through the brush. In the meantime, my wife looked at the other logger that was there, and she goes, oh, my God, was that Bigfoot? And the logger said, probably so, because he believed in Bigfoot because he had an experience as a kid. So my wife had her first experience with a tree knock. I'm quite sure that's what it was.
Yeah.
About a quarter of a mile from where I had mine. Only 40 years later. So
wow.
That was my experience as a kid. So, you know, as the time grew up, I spent time in Nebraska. And you know, my son is a believer, my oldest son, because he's seen one. But his was kind of different. Now, Nebraska, you wouldn't think, being a plain state, you'd have very many. There is not. The ones you see are along the rivers, the major rivers. So we lived not too far from a major river and a major creek. My son was at his buddy's house, within eyeshot of my house. And they were having a sleepover, and all of a sudden they called screaming that there was somebody looking in the upstairs window. And I'm like, somebody looking in the upstairs window, that's 8 foot off the ground. So I go over and I see something walking over. There's a dike next to the creek. See something or someone walking over the dike. And you can see where the footprints were mashed down underneath the window. So that was my son's first sighting.
Oh, wow.
And he said he has seen one. He now lives in Rapid City, South Dakota, in the Black Hills, and said he has seen one there. So the next experience, a personal experience I had, is we were hunting in the Redwood or White River National Forest by Glenwood Springs, Colorado. It's over by Utah. And in the middle of the night, I woke up one night and I heard whooping. And I'm like, well, there's a lot of things that make whooping sounds in the forest at night, especially, you know, during hunting season. But it was walking the ridge back and forth, and I'm just making a racket about 2 a.m. Well, the next morning, there was a hunting camp about a quarter mile away from ours, and it stopped by and asked if we were messing with them in the night. And it was like, no, why? Well, something had been throwing pine cones and rocks against their tent all night. So, like, wow, that was pretty interesting too.
Wow, yeah.
So then, back in 2019, my county experienced a huge flood. You could go back and research this on the news, Platte County, Nebraska. Before then, there was an experienced guy here down on this river that had a duck hunting blind. And he told me, he goes, you know, I'd have called anybody who said they seen Bigfoot a liar, until one day me and my grandson was walking to the duck blind across the sandbar. And all of a sudden, something upright walked between them and the duck blind and crossed in a part of the river that they know to be about 6 foot deep. And it only came up to about mid chest and walked out on the other side of the river. And granted, it was 30 degrees out. So he said it wasn't going to be no human being out there crossing the river at that temperature. So he had his grandson lay down to the footprints. Oh, and he said the neat thing about the footprints was they weren't side by side. They were in a straight line, almost a straight line. And from the heel of the left foot to the toe of the right foot, his grandson was 5'9". That was about the distance, but probably about a size 18 shoe, he said.
Wow.
So.
Are there many documented cases in that area? Do you know?
There is some documented. There is a Bigfoot museum in Hastings, Nebraska. That's about 90 miles. Matter of fact, that was my wife's birthday present. She wanted to go to the Bigfoot Museum, and we went down there one Sunday. And there have been documented. Have you ever heard of Bigfoot's braiding horsehair?
I have. That's actually. Yeah, yeah. I have actually heard that. Yeah.
That has happened not too far from where I live. And so this is at the museum too. So, but like I said, most of the sightings happen along the rivers because, you know, we got grassy plains. But in the eastern part of the state, you have a lot of crop ground, a lot of deer, a lot of small game, shelter belts that are going a mile long and 100 yards wide. I mean, there's all sorts of, I live 100 miles from the Missouri River, and that's where my cousin had his sighting. My cousin has seen it. He was a skeptic too, but he had seen something deer hunting. So, and since I found out what I had seen, or I knew what I seen after I seen it, but more of the stuff that I seen, I kind of get to talking to the old folks. Because, see, they're so scared to death that somebody's going to think they're crazy if they report something. You know, yeah. The next story is from an old guy by the Missouri River. And my cousin was telling me about his sighting. And this old guy, my cousin went up to use the restroom. And this old guy says, "You really believe in that thing?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, I got a story for you." And his wife kept trying to stop and think, "Oh my God, Harry, he's going to think you're crazy." And he told me that spring he had went out to his hay field, which was right by the Missouri River. And they go around the field, they call it making the headlands. That's you go around three or four times, so you have a place to turn around. And started going back and forth. Well, if the fawns are late that year, once in a while you'll hit one with a hay mower. So evidently he unfortunately hit one and kept going to the end of the field and come back. We got to about where he had hit that fawn, and he said, I swear to God, I thought a mountain gorilla had gotten the zoo. He goes, but this thing looked me in the eyes. And he told me what machine he used, because I used to be a farm implement mechanic. And knowing what machine he had, I am 6'2". So if I would have tried to look at the guy, I would have looked at his knees looking into the cab. So 6'2", probably another 2 foot, you could have looked this guy in the eye. He said, this thing looked me right in the eye, bent down, grabbed the dead fawn that he had just hit with a mower without losing eye contact at him, turned and took, he said, maybe 6-7 steps to cross that 50-yard distance, stepped over a standard three-wire barbed wire fence and off into the trees. And my cousin, he was out deer hunting and up in his blind. And he had been hunting this bunch real hard. Well, all of a sudden, I don't know if you're a hunter or ever heard an alarm call from a doe or a deer. And all of a sudden that blasted, and all of a sudden the deer come running by him. Well, he's bow hunting, archery hunting, so he couldn't get a shot. Well, he happened to see something in the distance, and it was watching him behind a big cottonwood tree, just kind of poking its head out at him about 100 yards away, a dark figure. And it shook him up bad enough. He got out of the stand and clutched his pistol all the way back to his pickup. So,
but wow.
I am a firm believer. I don't, you know, I've had people laugh at me, make fun of me. I don't care. I know what I saw. That is burned into my memory until the day I die.
Yeah. This happened in Oregon, right? Yeah.
Yeah. This all, except for my face-to-face experience, it all happened in Nebraska or what the one in Colorado.
Okay. Okay. I want to jump back really quick, Rich, if we may. You mentioned that, you know, when you're a child and the Sasquatch is staring through your window, you mentioned that it looked human other than the pointed head. Like, you mean it like it had a human looking face, or how do you mean by human?
Yeah, I mean, its eyes, it's the nose was a little flatter maybe. But I mean, you know, it's just, and its mouth was a little, lips were a little bit different, but it, its eyes, it's the way it looked at me, and it, still to this day,
yeah.
It, you know, the hair. See, I lived on the, you know, my basement window is like 6 inches off the ground, so it had to have put its left hand up on above the window and kneeled down to look into my window. It was like, you know.
Could you make out any details on it? Like what color his hair was? What color? Like did it...
A darkish red, almost black. You know, you kind of get the glow of the yard light. It almost looked reddish brown. But it, you know, from the light out of my room or the glow of the nightlight, it looked black. There was hair on its face, but it wasn't as thick as its body. The hair, you know, on its head wasn't, you know, combed. It was almost dreadlock type thing. And I couldn't see its palms.
Did it make any gestures towards you? Like, or did, was it just looking?
It was just looking at me, and it kind of tilted its head a little bit toward its right shoulder, you know, cause it had its arm above resting on the wall, and it just kind of like, curiosity.
Yeah.
You know, but it, and maybe it was a juvenile, I'm not sure. But it didn't, body wise, didn't look as big as you think it would. And, maybe that's why it was curious. Yeah. I don't know.
I often hear a lot of stories when people have, you know, encounters with juvenile Sasquatch, is that they're very curious, like even more so than the adult. I think it's almost some kind of trait that they just can't help, but you know, they try to overcome it, but they just can't help it. They want to know more about us, just like we want to know more about them. I think that that curiosity kind of dissipates a little bit as they get a little older and realize, you know, humans are probably bad news. But it really sounds like he was just curious, looking in the window and just wanted to see what you're doing or who you were and that type of thing.
Well, you know, like kids are always curious about other kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, do I got a playmate here? Because let's face it, you know, they don't go to Bigfoot daycare. They're probably alone, you know, want somebody to play with a little, you know, kids are kids. Even, you know, great apes or monkeys, you know, their kids play, their babies play, like kids play. Yeah. And maybe that's why, you know, the rock throwing, you know, I don't know. It's just, I will never, I got goosebumps now talking about it.
Yeah.
What
did you think you were looking at? Like, I mean, had you ever heard of Sasquatch before any of this happened? Well,
you know, my dad had taken us to The Legend of Boggy Creek, the movie. And, you know, we had watched, I don't know if you're old enough to remember a show called In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy.
Of course, yeah.
And they would have Bigfoot's, you know, shows on there. And I'd seen it there, but, you know, what they described and what I saw would be a different thing. You know, this wasn't, you know, monster, I guess. I was a little scared, you know, like I said, but I guess I don't think I was terrified, but I was scared.
Yeah. It's kind of hard for anyone to kind of make sense of that. You're really not expecting a giant head to be, you know, looking through your
window. Just looking in.
Yeah.
You know, because here I'd been there almost a year and, you know, and I'd seen deer run through the yard at night and I'd seen coyotes come through the yard. But, you know, never seen the dogs act that way before. Never seen the horse act that way before. And I knew I'd seen footprints. But I guess I didn't know what the footprints were of, you know, at the time. And I know there, you know, skeptics are saying, oh, well, you were 12, you know, we're just a kid, blah, blah, blah. It's unreliable. That's fine. Say what you want.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sticking to my guns. I know what I saw.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. It really is a weird thing because, you know, you're trying to make sense of it and you know, it makes it more difficult to talk about it if you don't know what you're talking about exactly, right? Like, did you ever tell anybody other than your sister kind of growing up? Did you tell any friends or anything like that?
I told my mom and uncle, you know, and they just kind of, brushed it off, you know, you're a nut. But my sister, you know, was personally there with a rock throwing thing and had heard some of the screams and the wood knocks. But, you know, so she knew what I was talking about. She knew I wasn't yanking anybody's chain, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and like I said, we were out in the middle of nowhere. Nobody knew we were there. And the closest neighbor was a mile and a half away and didn't know my dad had kids. They had no idea we were there. So.
When did you realize, you know, it must have taken some time for you to kind of comprehend, okay, well, that was a Sasquatch. That was Bigfoot looking in my window. How long did it take for that moment to occur to you?
Maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
Oh, right away.
You know, holy crap. Because we had just, and this happened during a school night. In the weekend, we had just watched Leonard Nimoy In Search Of thing on Bigfoot. So it stuck out of my mind a little bit, but not to the fact that the one they showed on the Leonard Nimoy is terrorizing. It was going after, I think it was talking about Boggy Creek. And I thought, this is nothing like it said on TV. Mm. You know, it was peaceful.
Yeah.
It wasn't tearing things, you know, trying to get me through the window. Because it never did act, you know, aggressive through the window.
Yeah, yeah. I find that most encounters, I'm going to say like 99% of people that I've talked to have had fairly, I don't want to say peaceful because it wasn't peaceful, but it wasn't aggressive as most people would make them out to be. So I don't buy that whole monster ripping people apart thing unless there's a reason right. for them to do it. I mean, if you were shooting a gun at them, okay, then that's a different story. But, you know, for the most part, they don't really go out looking for trouble. I don't think any. That's just my own opinion. And sorry, I didn't mean to interject there, but I just.
No, that a lot. That's fine. I mean, I love conversations like this. I mean, I had heard a couple out in Colorado where people with females that were on their period were accosted by what they later deemed as Bigfoot. But to me, I wonder if that's more of a testosterone rage filled young buck, you know, type of thing. Dominance type of thing, you know, because, you know, once in a while you hear something screaming and yelling and throwing rocks. But, you know, what's the real story behind it, I guess. And so I'm not a big proponent of the whole Bigfoot jumping in and out of dimensions or alien thing, I guess. Not from what I saw. But I know there's some people out there that think that. But, that's not me.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I hear that quite often, too. You know, the whole, they call it the woo factor. I'm sure you've heard that expression float around. But, you know, and I try to keep an open mind about things like that. But what I saw and what you saw was definitely not, it wasn't a magical thing. It was breathing. No, there was breath.
It was breathing.
Yeah. And, so it's hard to classify it into one certain category. So, yeah, I understand what you're talking about there.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been to the Bigfoot conference a couple of times here in Nebraska and talked to a couple of gentlemen who are with the Ponca tribe and, you know, listening to their history, you know, this Bigfoot's been around a long time and it's probably going to be around long after we're gone.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they know that too. They realize humans are quite destructive. So that's probably another reason why they choose to stay away from us. I can't really blame them either.
Right. So me and my wife had a conversation. Me and my wife, my son, and my one daughter's a skeptic. And all three of us honestly think that Bigfoot is a relative of Gigantopithecus. That seems to make the most sense.
Yeah.
You know, same with the Yeti or the Yeren, you know, Yowie or all the other sightings, you know, of on different continents. It, to us, anyway, I mean, we're no expert, but, you know, we've had experiences, so. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you about your son's encounter, because it happened in the same place, right?
Yeah, but, well, this one, hit when he was a kid, it was here in Nebraska, about 100 yards from our house. They live across the block next to the creek.
Oh, okay.
And there's a dike around it. We'll get, you know, we'll get deer. We're a small town, 352 population, small farming community. So, you know, houses are kind of spread apart here. Not a lot of street lights. It's dark. They lived along the creek that had, you know, the town had made a dike around the creek, you know, made it ever flooded, it pushed the water the other way and not come through town. And cougars once in a while, mountain lions, porcupines. So, you know, occasional wild moose or elk, but no bears or anything to be confused with. And it looking in that upstairs window that's 8 foot off the ground, there's not a lot of things that can be confused with that.
Yeah.
So
how did your son take it, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask.
Oh, they wouldn't go outside the rest of summer after dark. They were scared crapless. You know, they heard there for the first couple of nights. He'd hear, he slept upstairs. He'd hear a noise outside and he'd come down, "Dad, I'm scared. Dad, I'm scared. I seen something through the window." And, you know, nothing there. Of course, our windows are like 13 and a half, 14 foot off the ground. So something's looking in the window there. It's really big.
Oh, yeah.
So
I'm going to ask you a weird question here, Richard, and I hope you don't take offense to it.
No problem.
But was it almost validating to you? I mean, for you to have a sighting like that up close and personal, and then also, you know, many decades later, your son experiences the same thing. Was it a little bit validating? And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, like, it's okay that, you know what, now now someone else.
There's been a lot of things that have made me feel validated. You know, my kids had heard stories of this, but his little buddies that where he was at his house had never heard me talk about it. So when they both said they seen something looking through the window, well, that was kind of validating. Yes. Starting to learn more of the things that happened to me out there, as far as the rock throwing and the knocks, that was like, wow, that's what that means, Rod. That, you know, that happened. That happened to me. I know what that is. I've experienced that. The Colorado thing, you know, I'd never heard a whoop before, so that was kind of nice. But I guess the most validating thing is when we were out to Oregon and my wife heard that tree knock, and we heard that tree knock, and it was her first experience. And it was only a quarter mile from where I had mine. That was probably the biggest validation. My wife's attitude changed after that. She wasn't skeptical anymore. She's all in. She's like, "Oh my God, you weren't lying. This really happened." And so, yeah. And then this last year, that was her birthday present. We went to the Bigfoot Museum. She got to talk to her, and like, think of her name here real quick off the top of my head. I'll look it up here.
Did it open up a door for you? I mean, did you guys go down, you and your wife go down that rabbit hole? Have you started traveling down there yet?
We are talking about, they're looking into doing some expeditions down in Oklahoma or Texas, maybe one in Washington. We'll just have to see, you know, what pertains, I guess, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'd say that'd be a big yes. Yeah. It's funny how.
Yeah, I mean,
funny how
we almost went to one in Wisconsin, I think it was. But then I had to work. Okay, so the lady who runs the Bigfoot Museum here in Nebraska is Harriet McFeely. The Bigfoot lady, they call her.
I've heard that name somewhere. Oh, I probably read it somewhere. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she has many exhibits in her little museum, and she does expeditions. Even she's probably in her almost 80.
And she's still getting out there and searching for clues.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Good for her.
She likes doing all female ones. Kudos to her. I mean, you know, I'm hope I can go that well at that age.
Me too. I'm hoping I can still walk when I'm 80.
Right. So, yeah. You know, it's just, and where I am or was, where they still live, is about an hour and a half southwest of Portland. So up in the Cascades a little bit. On that coastal plain area. So that's my story.
I mean, wow.
That, I'm getting old enough in life now. I mean, I've told it quite a few times, and some people, you know, wow, other people are like, "You're full of it." You know, I don't care.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this question here before I let you go, Richard.
You bet.
And I ask all my guests this, and it really is million ways you can answer it, but like, how has it changed you? I mean, has it opened your eyes to other things, or are you more, you know?
You know what? It has. and we had talked about this with Bigfoot, but now, as far as I believe in aliens. Now I believe in ghosts, the paranormal, but I don't think Bigfoot is paranormal. That's the word I was looking for earlier. As far as, you know, blaming in aliens, well, you know, you got to be crazy to think in this big universe that we're the only living thing out there. So, but I don't think there's a connection between Bigfoot and him.
You mean like, I mean, you know, the possibility of, you know, the Sasquatch living in our forest kind of undetected. And I'll use air quotes on that one. You know, if that could happen, then why can't this other stuff kind of be going on at the same time?
Right. Well, and then, you know, talking to one scientist that, you know, as far as paranormal energy, energy never dies. And there's energy in your brain, you know. So where does that energy go? Does it die or does it go to another dimension? You know, and then my children are quite exceptionally smart. So then they'll, for me to join in on some of their conversations in physics, I kind of had to take a rudimentary course to kind of know what they're, I might not understand it completely, what they're talking about, but I know what they're talking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they start talking about dark matter, alternate planes, wormholes. You know, here I, you know, explain to me how, you know, light speed is actually not as what you think it is. You have to fold space and not achieve light speed.
Yeah.
So.
Warp space or warp drives in warping the fabric of space. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It sounds like we're researching the same kind of things here.
You know, you know, I wouldn't mind meeting you in person sometime. You know, that'd be awesome.
Well, it definitely sounds like I have to get to either Nebraska or Oregon, because I've never been that far south to, I've never been that south, far south, period, but I'd love to do an expedition down in the U.S. I hear there's a lot of hot spots down there, but I'd love to do that.
Oklahoma's supposed to be, and that's fairly close to us. That's 6 hours. You know, they really, being that we're the plains, they really don't do any in Nebraska. I haven't heard any yet in Minnesota. I heard there was one in Wisconsin, but that's also about 6-7 hours away.
Are you talking about conferences?
Conferences and research expeditions.
Oh, I see.
Go out and camp for, you know, a couple weeks at a time. That's what we have looked into doing. There was one down by the Texarkana, Texas, down by the Bayou country down there. Because you have the Honey Island Swamp Monster down there, and Bigfoot sightings down there as well. And then one could slip over into Arkansas to the legend of Boggy Creek. So,
yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And then there was, now that we talk about it, there was a tale I heard of one in, I think it was British Columbia, about a mom with a girl, kids, and dad was off working, and a Bigfoot come to the house, and they, mom and kids, ran off, and it smashed a barrel of salmon or something.
Yeah, I actually interviewed the great nephew of that gentleman.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. There, wow. And without going into too much detail, there was a reason for that. I mean, it wasn't a random act of violence. There was a reason that the Sasquatch attacked their cabin. So. They don't really talk about it too often, because it's just part of their family's history that they're not supposed to bring up. So,
oh, gotcha.
Yeah, without
so there's
yeah without telling me what happened, he kind of told me what happened, but yeah, right. That sort of
thing. Well, there's always three sides to every story: their story, your story, and what really happened.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like I'm sure you've heard the story of Ape Canyon there on Mount St. Helens, or
yeah I've heard for sure. Yeah,
you know, so all them trails, you know, and I do watch some of the Bigfoot shows on TV, and some of them I just roll my eyes and think, oh my God, you're doing a discredit to this. And others are okay, that are somewhat interesting. But
yeah, you know, the only problem I have with those shows, though, is that they're really trying to emphasize the spook factor. I mean, they're really trying to make people scared, and that doesn't. I don't get into that.
Right, and you know, because some of that stuff that I learned, I picked up on, and then double checked it, cross referenced it with Google and stuff. You know, as far as the behaviors, one of the shows I hate the worst is. It's got a bunch of these hillbillies running around.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
And
without
the show, I just.
Yeah. Without naming the show. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's another one that happens in the South where they want to kill one. And I don't agree with that either.
No, me neither. Absolutely.
I mean, if you had to defend yourself is one thing, but just to add, do they actively go out and hunt one? And I don't know. No, I don't think that's right.
No.
Because I don't think there's enough population that you know, it teeters on the edge of extinction or, you know, inbreeding. So, you know, every life is precious, especially with theirs.
Yeah, so. And we just don't know their population. We don't know their society. We don't know what their lifespan is. We don't have any of that, any idea about that, so.
So
I don't think killing is a good idea either. Yeah. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So in your opinion, between Alaska, Canada and North America, how many Sasquatches would you think there'd be?
Oh boy. Oh man. That is a loaded question because in my area, that's the British Columbia interior. There's sightings quite often.
Right.
Now, if you were to judge a population based on that, I would say it's fairly healthy. It's probably not robust, but it's probably a good population. If you go down to the areas where, let's see, Chilliwack and Abbotsford and closer to the U.S. border where like it's really rainforest area, there's sightings constantly, all the time. I believe that there's a higher population there than there is here just because there's not really much for snow there in the winter. You know, there's more places to hide. There's a lot more wildlife in the woods, that sort of thing. So, geez, I couldn't even begin to answer. I don't think the numbers are low, but I don't think it's super high either. So
in my opinion, from the tip of Florida to the tip of Alaska and everywhere in between, and that's counting subspecies like the Ohio grassman, the skunk ape, you know, I couldn't imagine it being more than 12,000 with a majority being in the Pacific Northwest, you know, from California, Northern California through British Columbia.
Yeah, it could be. Definitely could be.
You know, any more than that, I think the sightings are becoming more prevalent as, you know, society expands.
Yeah.
Gets back into the woods and, you know, deforestation. But any less than I think you would have a problem with inbreeding.
Well, we had some major wildfires go on here 2 years ago. It burned a lot of land. And so that really displaced a lot of their population, I think. So maybe that's has something to do with more sightings in my area and in surrounding areas. Maybe they got pushed out. Who knows, really? I mean, there's a bunch of factors that we could play into that. But I honestly really couldn't. I couldn't even give you an educated guess because I just don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, you know, I like to throw an opinion out there. I'm no expert by no means, but it's always nice to put a number sometimes to things.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, talking about disasters causing sightings, my dad told me this story once, and he said it was a guy he worked with, and it was after the eruption of Mount St. Helens that they were with a geological survey team, and they had found a body up on Mount St. Helens, and it wasn't human, but it was human-like, and they had to hush it all up. So
yeah, I heard like that story. Yeah, I actually heard that one too. So, I just watched a video about that last week. As you're saying that, yes.
Yeah. yeah. You know, that they all had to sign papers, and they had a visit from the FBI and NSA that they had to keep this quiet. And my dad was telling his girlfriend at the same time this, and she's like, well, I've lived here all my life. I've never seen anything. And then why would the government want to keep it a secret? Well, at the time the guy told my dad the story, there was the deal with the spotted owl down in Oregon and Washington and logging. So just imagine, you know, look what it almost destroyed the logging industry trying to protect the spotted owl. And it was like, you know, how much ground would they have to give if they found an actual Bigfoot for it to roam? It would completely destroy the Pacific Northwest logging industry.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those things that kind of goes around, like, cause I understand, like, I'm on the West Coast as well. So I kind of right. understand that too. I mean, and then you got the factor of, you know, people, well, you know what, they are real. Let's go bag one type of thing. And then that's just not doing any good yeah. for anybody. So there's a bunch of reasons why they could possibly be covering it up. And I do think that they do know that these things are right. out there. But what that reasoning for covering it up is, I couldn't right. say for sure either. Yeah.
So let me ask you about this. Then there's a notable guy that was proven a fake without saying a name, but his initials were TS.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, what do you think of him?
Oh, boy. Oh, that's another loaded question. I really don't know how to answer that. I mean, from what I understand, he doesn't live that far from me.
Right.
He's actually a really nice guy. Having said that, some of his research is a little sketchy.
Right.
I mean, I've watched his videos. I watched his documentary, and I've seen his videos online. And I was actually on... he has a podcast on his YouTube channel that someone else does, but I've talked to other people who know him, and they all give him the credits that, you know, they think he deserves. But
yeah.
some of it's just yeah. like, really?
The reason I ask is I know somebody who has met him, said the same thing. Great guy, nice guy. But there's them things, you know.
Yeah.
He's got a couple of things out there that were proven fake, and so, you know, it only takes one time, and it just throws everything you've ever done out the window.
Exactly, yeah. So.
And, I mean, but no, my friend said he's a nice guy, nice enough guy. And then, you know, that with the whole thing. Oh, sorry, I said a name, I guess. Sorry. But
I'll just beep it out. I'll just beep it out.
Okay. You know, I know he didn't. Because I know somebody else that has met, talked to him about it. You know, he was not so happy about that.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah,
it's been great talking to you. I could sit here and talk all night, but I better get back to work. And okay.
Well, Richard, this has been great, man. I really do appreciate you coming on and sharing yeah. with me your stories. That was fascinating. Thank you so much.
I guess someday I'll have to listen to your story and find it here and listen to your story about everything.
Yeah, for sure.
So.
And if you go on an expedition, let me know what you see or hear. I'd love to hear back.
Right. I hope everything in your family is good and healthy, and you take care and have a great evening.
You too. Thank you, sir. And for the listeners, if you guys just want to hang around, we're going to close out the show. Stay there. And we're back, everyone. We are back to pull the pin on this one. But before we do that, we have to give a huge thank you to Rich for taking the time to come on the show today. Rich, thank you so much, sir. I certainly do appreciate it. You got me thinking about a few things, most notably the population. Now, ever since you brought that up when we recorded to the time that I finish editing and whatnot, I've been kind of thinking about what is the population of the Sasquatch people? You know, I know you gave a number, but I'm not entirely certain that we can go with anybody in particular. You know, there really is no way to tell, you know, unless, you know, do you guys have an idea? Let me know what you think. NicolaValleyBigfoot@gmail.com. I kind of think that they're a lot more than we kind of realize. I mean, the ones where we do have sightings are wow. You know, if you see one, I'm going to venture a guess saying that there's probably two or three that you don't see. And, you know, I got nothing to base that on other than, you know, stories that I've been told or eyewitness testimony and that sort of thing. But yeah, I'm kind of thinking that I do think they have a healthy population. I'm going to put it that way. And you guys can let me know what you think. NicolaValleyBigfoot@gmail.com. But Rich, thank you again, sir. I really do appreciate it. But I think that's going to do it for us this week, guys. We got to do this. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, email me at NicolaValleyBigfoot@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you, possibly get your story on the show. So write in. I guess one more thing before we go. I kind of got the ball rolling on the Sasquatch conference to be held here in the British Columbia interior. And so far, things are looking really good. The first hurdle I really had to overcome was getting the time off work because there was no way I was going to be able to do it unless I had that time off. And you know what? Check that box because I did get that time off. So I've gotten a few emails from you guys and the response has been quite positive and actually a little overwhelming that this thing could be quite the event. So write in, let me know what you guys think. What would you like to see there? Who would you like to see speak? That sort of thing. And let's keep this going. Obviously, with the holidays, there's not going to be much motion going on, you know, in the next couple of weeks. But I can promise you I am putting a lot of heart. I am putting a lot of time and effort into this thing so far. So I'm going to say that it's a very, very strong possibility that this will happen. But, of course, I'll keep you guys all updated as things happen. That's the best I can tell you for now, but things are looking great. Things are really looking good. So write in and give me some suggestions. Okay, I think that's going to do it for us this week, guys. Tune in next week. I got another great show for you. So, another person from Merritt, which is really, really kind of cool. But I'm sure you guys will love it. So tune in next week. And until then, I will talk to you all later. Bye.